Greetings, everyone. Welcome to a special bonus episode of the Musical Connections Podcast. I am your host, Zach Snow. This is the show where we connect the music of Newfoundland and Labrador with the rest of the world. So come along with me now as we discover more about the music of Newfoundland and Labrador. On this bonus episode, I reconnect with our old friend, Con O'Brien of the Irish Descendants. We talk about their upcoming 35 for 35 anniversary tour, as of course the Irish Descendants will be celebrating 35 years this very year. And by the time that this episode drops, we'll be just kicking off that tour. Well, we're going to be talking about what's going to be happening next week for the band. They'll be kicking off the festival and conference on May the 7th at the official kickoff party at the Jag Soundhouse. And they're going to be opening up the show entirely. And they're also going to be playing the awards gala at the Mary Brown Center on May the 8th. And it is a very special occasion that they're going to be playing it for. Because the song that they recorded in 1994, Let Me Fish Off Cape St. Mary's, written by Otto Kelland, is being inducted into the Canadian Songwriters Hall of Fame. We talk all about that, their 35 years as a group, and their future plans for the summer, which also include a date at the 49th Annual Newfoundland and Labrador Folk Festival. So let's get connecting here on this special bonus episode of Musical Connections as I connect with Con O'Brien of the Irish Descendants. Greetings, everyone. Welcome back to the Musical Connections Podcast. This is the show where we connect the music of Newfoundland and Labrador with the world. And we are reconnecting with an old friend of ours here on the podcast. He needs no introduction. This is round three with him, as this year is the 35th year for the Irish Descendants. By the time that this airs, they'll be already on tour promoting the 35 for 35 box set. They're also going to be working on some brand new songs. They're going to be coming out over the next few months. And they are also up for Album of the Year at the 2025 East Coast Music Awards in St. John's. My old friend Con O'Brien joins me once again here on the podcast. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Zach. First, it's a great pleasure to be here.
And it seems like you never go away when it comes to this podcast. I mean, you're the only other three-time guest here. I think Ben Chapman Smith's the other one.
Is that right? Well, you know, I have the gift of gab, and you know, I've been around for 40 years playing music here in Newfoundland and Labrador, so I got a few stories to tell you.
Yes, and that's the beauty of having this podcast. We can go as long as we want and so many more stories to tell. Maybe you'll be the first four-time guest when I get you back in come Christmas time.
Christmas time, we'll do it again.
But let's focus on this one right now, because the last time we had you in, you were talking about an Irish Descendants Christmas, and you put out the 35 for 35 box set, which is right over there in my cabinet right over here, and I was fortunate to work on it, running up the discography for it. And this is 35th year of the Irish Descendants. So when you started this group in 1990, yourself, Darcy, Larry, and Ronnie, to have the current lineup of you, yourself, Jeff Kinsman, Madeline Carter, Rowan Sherlock, and many more shows, many awards, and many experiences later, do you think you'd be at this point right now?
You know, I didn't. I mean, when we first started, you know, we were all working in the fishery. For me, I was going to university in the fall and winter. And just really playing around the pubs, just around the corner from here. Aaron's Pub was the first place that I really started to play music. And back then, it was, you know, some of our big inspirations, like Ryan's Fancy and the Sons of Erin, they were still going concerns back, you know, back in those days. The Sons of Erin, of course, Aaron's Pub. And so when Ralph and the Sons used to go on the road, we had a little band called Conoran and Tom, and which we later turned into, coincidentally, into the Descendants. I'll tell you how that happened. That's a great story.
Oh, yes.
We're up to Ralph's setting up. Ralph would come out. You know, we didn't know much about PAs or anything like that, but Ralph would come out and do a little sound check, and we start Wednesday nights down there. He'd play Wednesday through Sunday. Anyway, we're doing a lot of work down there. We were probably working, you know, two weeks a month. And going to university, you know, that was kind of cutting into my study time, but I just, you know, get bitten by that performance bug. So anyway, it was myself and Ronnie Power and a fellow from Brigus South. His name was Thomas Badcock. Thomas played mandolin, and he was a great singer. Passed away a few years ago. Comes from a very musical family from there. But we were called, we didn't have a name. The band was called Con, Ron, and Tom. That rhymed. And we were going along for about a year and a half or 2 years as Con, Ron, and Tom. And anyway, one afternoon we're there setting up. Ralph was setting us up for that night. And Ralph's wife, Philomena, comes out around the corner. Someone had just called down and wondering if the Condoms were playing. And Ralph said, "Ah, Jez, you're going to have to change the name, son." And that's where the name comes from. Ralph, I said, "What are we going to call it, Ralph?" "Call it the Descendants." And that's how the name Descendants shows up. And then later, a couple of years later, we run into Darcy and Larry, who were playing with Irish Coffee. So we amalgamated the two names to come up with the Irish Descendants.
And the rest, they say, is history. You've had more than about 35 or 40 members. And your longest tenure member aside from you now is Rowan Sherlock, who's wicked on the fiddle when he first started playing with the Descendants. But he also plays piano now since you've added Madeline Carter to the group. That's and right. She's a fiddle player. And Jeff Kinsman's on bass. And he's also engineering some of the songs that you're putting out on social media as well. So we'll get to them shortly. Right now, I say by the time this drops, the ECMAs would have already happened, or the ECMAs are going to be happening soon, May 7th to the 11th at St. John's, with the gala May 8th at the Mary Brown Center. The Irish Descendants Christmas album you put out in 2023 is up for Album of the Year. It's up for the same album alongside likes of Vish 10, Newfoundland's own Quote the Raven, which just put out their most recent album, Map the Dark, and Classified's Luke's View, among others. So did this come as a shock to you to find out that album was named for Album of the Year?
You know, it did, because we haven't been really taking advantage of the music or the ECMAs in the last years. We've had lots of success in our early days. You know, at the time, we were always busy around the time of the ECMAs, and for some reason or other, we always found ourselves in Western Canada when the ECMAs were taking place, because that's the time of the year they've changed where they used to be in February. So we always were out Western Canada then. And so for many years, we weren't really participating. But in the last couple of years, we've teamed up with new management, Bruce Morrell over in Halifax, and we're sort of focusing a little bit more on the East Coast of Newfoundland, or East Coast of Canada. And that's, you know, it's the best of both worlds. So Bruce said, you know, we should be taking part in these things. You know, you guys have a brand that's a well-known brand. And there's no reason for you not to be involved in the ECMAs. It's important. And so, and the Music NL as well. So that's something that we've kind of refocused on in the last couple of years. And when he called and said, "I've submitted you for a couple of things this year," and we found out that we were nominated for Album of the Year, it was a great thrill. And, you know, the recognition is really important. The competition is stiff, but we know, you know, I've been through this many, many times in the past.
Oh, yes.
So it's wonderful to be recognized just in you know, by your peers in that sense in the business. And it gives us an opportunity to walk the halls of the conference, and we're doing three major things at the conference performance-wise. So we're going out in Western Newfoundland for the first little leg of the tour, and then we come back to in the second week of May, we come back to St. John's, and we take in the ECMAs, and then we go right back out on the road. And we're going right first. We leave on the Monday after the ECMAs and drive right to Labrador City. So it's one of those kind of tours. We're doing 15 shows across the island and up into Labrador, and even on the North Shore of Quebec, we're doing a show there as well. So
that's wonderful. Now, I got the full list of tour days right in front of me. So you're starting May 2nd in Stephenville at the Arts and Culture Center out there.
That's right.
And then you're going to be coming here May 7th to 10th. You're going to be hosting the kickoff party for the East Coast Music Awards. You're playing alongside Mick Davis and Thin Love and with Violet, two great bands. Mick Davis is phenomenal, and with Violet are one of the most hot up-and-coming alt-pop bands, or alt-rock bands, I should say, because what's the definition of alt-pop? Because, like, alternative seems like it's the key word.
I don't know. There's been so many changes in the categories of the genres over the years. But, I mean, it's a great thrill for us to be hosting and being on that particular show. You know, we're here in the heart of Newfoundland's music community, with the East Coast music community coming here. And I've been around a long time, so with a lot of these folks I know, you know, there'll be people within that I'm. It's like old home week. You get to meet. You know what it's like. You've been around for a good while yourself now.
So. Oh yes, about a decade or 11 years being in the media, and about 7 years covering the music sector. This is only my second ECMA that I'm attending.
Is that right?
Yep. No joke.
You know, we've attended a good many over the years, but it's always nice to see people that you know. Like, I mean, I'll have a lot of old friends that I'll reconnect with. Some musicians, some people. You know, people working in the industry, so that's always a nice thing to do, and to have it here in your hometown, that's even better.
Just the best, and you don't have to spend a fortune to get out of here.
That's right.
It's so awesome. I've talked about it enough over the past few weeks leading up to the East Coast Music Awards, but I am really excited to get to meet the best of Atlantic Canadian music. Sure. And the other two nominees for that Album of the Year category were Maggie Andrew and Jamila.
Yeah.
And but it's crazy to believe that, like, you know, 35 years later, you're still in the forefront of Atlantic Canadian music. Were you guys, when the ECMAs were first founded in 1991, 92, and then Newfoundland and Labrador was included, you guys, like, took home a lot of honors back then when you were really just getting going. Like, you took home Entertainer of the Year a couple of times, I would imagine.
Yeah. You know, we're so old that we predate the East Coast Music Awards. It was the Atlantic Showcase, I think it was called. And, you know, a couple of movers and shakers that I've known for years. Brooks Diamond was involved in it, you know, and he was a big manager at the time. He managed Ryan's Fancy, for instance, and Rita McNeil, and still in the business, you know. He's still going strong.
Still alive?
Still alive and still at it. Him and his wife Fiona still doing promotions and tours and all kinds of things. And, you know, just a tremendous, tremendous asset for me over the years as a guy that I could call up at any time and get advice and take advice or, you know, help him out. And then another guy named Rob Cohen. So our first time over there was playing, showcasing for that awards. And then a couple of years later, the East Coast Music Awards or the East Coast Music Association forms. And, you know, that was right around the time we had signed a record deal. So for us, it was cutting edge. We always had this situation where the industry is so large and, you know, there's only so many people in Newfoundland taking advantage of it. So the smaller provinces didn't have the same amount of membership. So we always were, you know, a little bit in awe of the Nova Scotians. But, you know, the industry has grown in so many ways since that time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were, I guess, the pioneers of it, over here. So to be part of that, to become East Coast Music Award winners was, you know, was a thrill and an honor. And it certainly was something that helped out our careers in many, many ways. You know, I always used to say, well, I don't need to go to the East Coast Music Awards anymore. Everybody knows who we are. But there's new people coming all the time. You know, you weren't even born when all this went down.
Oh yeah, that's when it first started.
And now you're learning from me and other people who were there and did it. You'll run into Jerry Jones, and you'll see Shelley Nordstrom, and you'll meet the movers and shakers of this industry who have shaped it and formed it into what it is today. And it's a big business now. So it's you know, when we were playing those times, we were kids. I was 23 years old the first time I hit the ground at the East Coast Music Awards. And, you know, we just didn't realize how big a business it was. People always say to me, oh, you must love that, performing and playing, and I do. But, you know, performing and presenting the music is only about 25% of the work.
Mm-hmm.
The other work is behind the scenes, getting ready to go, going, doing all the things that you need to do, like what we're doing here right now.
Yeah, and presenting yourself to export buyers, yeah, and presenting your brand to those potential festival promoters or agents or bookers or
that's
labels,
right,
back in the day. I don't think there's much of that now. Not so much, you know, big label, but more so independent labels that are looking to, you know, get that next big act and really, like, you know, take them into the stratosphere.
And, you know, we all would still love to have labels. I mean, selling CDs. I'm old enough that I predate CDs. So when we first started, we were on cassette tape only. Misty Morning Shore was out for about 2 years before CDs came into play. And that would have been the first, probably the first Newfoundland band CD. Kelly Russell had put out a compilation called Another Time, I believe.
Yeah, The Songs of Newfoundland.
Songs of Newfoundland.
And really great album.
Really, really good.
A lot of saxophone.
That's right, yeah. Rick Oller played a bit of sax on that. But, I mean, you know, that was cutting-edge stuff. And, you know, we were right on the beginning of that. I remember saying to my mother, "Mom, you know, we're going to have to get a CD player." And she said, "Well, what do you need one of those for? We don't have CDs." And nobody had CDs, but this was a new format.
Oh, my God.
And so, you know, I always tell that story. And poor mom, she was, "Oh, I don't know if we really need to spend the money on one of those." And it wasn't like, you know, now you can go up and buy a CD player for 20 bucks somewhere. They were expensive back then.
Wow.
And so I always say that we were probably the first Newfoundland band to put out a CD, and we'll be the last one.
Now, I'm not sure if you'll be the last one. I mean, CDs are still being made today, but they're not being, you know, promoted as much compared to streaming counterparts and like Spotify and Apple Music. But also, the funny thing is, CD pushed out vinyl records, and now vinyl records are pushing CDs out again. And vinyl, you and I had this conversation back in November. 80% of Fred's record sales, like probably now and still going strong today, are all vinyl because people are looking for that piece of nostalgia that really takes them back to a time where things were simpler and can really like have that hard copy of music to look at the liner notes and look at all the hard work people go into it.
It's a tactical thing. People, like when I was young, when I was your age, we were buying records and you couldn't wait to get it in your hands. You wanted to see what, you know, what they, you were, while you listened to the, you put it on for the first time, you took the album cover and you went through everything. You looked at the pictures of the band. It was really important. And one other thing that is lost on an awful lot of people, we make a CD, 15 songs on it. And, you know, you think about what songs you're going to put on a CD. There's often a theme to the sound recording. And CDs allowed you to skip. Now, you know, you didn't have, now you can press a button and you don't want to listen to that song. You get up and lay a piece of vinyl on a turntable. You drop the needle on it and you go over there and sit in the corner. And either you got to physically get up and change it, or you listen to it all. And it lets everybody absorb all of the songs and all of the material that's being recorded. And for a musician, that's really important. Like, we take a lot of time thinking about songs, what you're going to put on an album, then arranging them, then rehearsing them, then performing them. And, you know, with Spotify and, you know, we're the first bands that went through Napster. When Napster shows up, that's a really tough thing for us. You know, like we were selling records, gold records is a 50. If you have a gold record in this country, it's 50,000 records. I mean, back in those days, we were selling 30, 40, 50,000 records.
That's insane.
And now it's hard to sell 1,000 records.
Yeah.
So it's and that means the revenues are down, the ability to, you know, get the money to make records is a lot harder for bands these days. Technology's allowed you to record them a little cheaper. You know, back in the old days, we'd be paying $200 an hour in a studio.
That's nuts.
And you can go in your bedroom and do it on your iPhone now.
Yeah.
So it's you know, that's changed a little bit, but you know, people are on the internet, and oftentimes they're not even listening to a full song; they're listening. People have short attention spans when it comes to
that. Yes, they're using like 30 or 40 seconds for it for a TikTok dance or something.
Right. That's right. And that's becoming, you know, I'm watching, you know, we did that thing with the Whistling Donkeys. I was looking at their followers on TikTok and on Facebook. They had 150,000 followers on Facebook. Like, whoa.
That's insane.
You know, we probably have about 15,000, about a tenth of that. We've been on the go for long, long time. And so it's, you know, you look at Gerard McCarthy, who comes here. Gerard is a TikTok sensation. That's how did the people in St. John's, Newfoundland find out about this young man from Ireland?
Yeah, he posts like a song every single day, maybe two a day.
Sometimes two a day. And he's just really recording, most likely with a phone, in his studio. There's nothing, you know, the production values don't need to be that, because he's not doing the whole song. Picks out great songs, got a great voice, and people are just looking forward to seeing that. That's what we're doing more so, more now than with new material. It's not to box, not to package it as a CD. It's to put it into socials.
Yeah.
And get that extra bit of, people want something new every opportunity they can get it. So that's one of the reasons.
But like at the same time too, like I hate this kind of like perception now of like, you know, if there's a song that like, you know, is good, but the quality's not good, it's made in your basement. Everybody and their mother is making stuff in their basement. I mean, one of the best examples I can come up with this is Billie Eilish. Like Billie Eilish and her brother Phineas, like they're multi-Grammy award winners and they made these songs in their basements.
That's right.
As long as you know what you're doing and the creative mind behind it and like, you know, you have the right tools to get the song where you need it to get to.
That's right.
If you have an understanding of like basic audio mixing and music, musical intuition, you can achieve anything and you can win multiple Grammy awards just like her.
Look at Justin Bieber. Justin Bieber starts off as an internet sensation, and then of course he builds a big touring career and recording career. But that allows everybody to have an opportunity.
Exactly.
You don't have to have a big record company behind you. If the stars line up, the song is good, and you know everything works out for you, you can make yourself famous overnight.
Pretty much. Now, we can talk about this for a long time, but I do want to get to one of the main reasons I did get you on here. Let Me Fish Off Cape St. Mary's, a song that you did in 1994 with the Irish Descendants for the Gypsies and Lovers record. I was actually talking with Rome, believe it or not, because I seen your Facebook post and it said it was 1997. It was 1994. I got the album itself. And I should know, I wrote the discography for the 35 for 35 campaign.
Right.
And you recorded that in 1994 with John McDermott, and it's been inducted into the Canadian Songwriters Hall of Fame. That's a huge honor for a song that was written by Otto P. Kellen, like way back when.
He wrote in 1947.
Wow.
So
first things first. How excited are you to know the fact that like a song that you sang back in '94 and had and sung it for thousands of times since then is being inducted into the Canadian Songwriters Hall of Fame.
Well, this is an incredible thing. The song itself, it's the unofficial anthem of Newfoundland. And, you know, you can go like we've done for 35 years now. And I've sung that literally thousands of times now. And, you know, it's a great honor to sing that song. I almost didn't record it.
Really?
Thinking about it because, you know, the definitive version of that up until that point for me was Dennis Ryan.
Yeah, Ryan's Fancy.
Ryan's Fancy had done it. And at the same, around the same time, Phyllis Knowsworthy also put out, you know, Natalie?
Natalie Knowsworthy?
Yeah. Her mom.
Yeah.
Her mom had a version of it.
Okay, yeah. I think that was on the All the Best in 88.
That's right.
And Gordon Quinton has, like, Gordon that
Quinton
guitar.
There's been a lot of versions of it. I tell you who else recorded it that would have had a lovely version. It was an Irish lady who was here. She lived over in PEI, but she toured Newfoundland a lot. It was Anna McGoldrick.
Wow.
So she recorded it and had a beautiful version of it. But it's that kind of iconic song. And, you know, for me, who, I mean, I was a kind of a bit of a protege of Ryan's Fancy and the Sons of Erin, who were, you know, you had Ralph, a tremendous singer, Dennis Ryan, a tremendous singer. To take on Dennis Ryan's signature song was a bit daunting for me. And I remember we were looking for a ballad. We were looking for a Newfoundland ballad. And Derek Harrington, who produced that album from the Harrington Brothers, said to me, he said, you know, you got to do Cape St. Mary's. I said, I don't know, Derek, why, you know, it's Dennis's song. I mean, you know, how am I ever going to be able to think that I could possibly present that song any better or any, you know, That's a tough one. He said, you can do it. And so I remember clearly, like, we recorded it. I learned it that morning. I'd never sung it before.
Wow.
That afternoon we recorded it. And I recorded the whole version. And then a couple of months later, the opportunity came for John McDermott to come in. And we were good friends with John, and we were doing shows with John. And, you know, he offered up his services, and we thought, well, hey, there's an opportunity to bring his wonderful voice to that part of that recording. And so we split the verses. There is a version of it somewhere in the ether of just me singing it, but I've always wanted to have a record of it, of just me singing, because, you know, it's a song that, it's not an easy song to sing.
No, absolutely not.
And so, you know, I always wanted to make sure that I left this world having a version of just my voice on it. So we just recorded it again.
As of this recording right now?
This recording right now.
I can't wait to hear that when it comes out.
We're actually going to even put an instrumental version of it on the recording.
Wow.
People can sit back and just sing along to it.
And it'll be in a different key this time, because I think back when you recorded in 94 with John McDermott, it was in like...
Yeah, it's changed. It's just gone from a B to a C. And that was mostly because it worked better live in the key that we're doing it now. And, you know, your voice changes over time.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's, for me, you know, your voice is like a keg of fine wine. It should get better with age if you don't hurt it.
Oh, yes.
And, I've been fortunate enough to be, you know, using it a lot over the years. And for me, I sing that song many thousands of times better now than I did then. So it's when people hear it, it's going to be wonderful. Rowan wrote us a lovely string arrangement for it, and so it's, you know, it's a good representation of the transition from, you know, from the 90s until, you know, 35 years later, really. So.
That's insane. I did not know that you were hesitant to record it at first.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
That's insane.
You know, I mean, here we were. Dennis Ryan was a being. I would have idolized Dennis Ryan and Ralph O'Brien.
You ever met Dennis?
Oh, many, many times, yeah. Dennis Ryan comes to me and said, "You got to have your voice recorded." Gives me great, great encouragement as a young singer up at Aaron's Pub, you know, 200 steps from here, less than 200 steps from where we are right now. And Dennis was a family friend. My father was a big fan of Ryan's Fancy, so they would, when I was a kid, they come to my house.
So what?
I would have them over.
Wow.
A lot of Irish doctors in town at the time, and still are. There, you know, the second or third generation of those Irish doctors are still here. You know, so they were all hanging out. And my recollection of those guys is, you know, goes back to when I'm, you know, just a child, really. But to take on, you know, the song. I mean, Dennis Ryan really knocked that one right out of the park.
Oh, big time.
And he was a tremendous singer. And they presented it. They were the darlings of Newfoundland. And, you know, they had, by the time I recorded, they're not playing together anymore.
Yeah, and I think Dennis re-recorded that in 91 for Miss Cover Mountains.
That's right. And, you know, like, to take that on at that time was something, I don't know. I thought to myself, I have no business doing. You know, a lot of people will look to our version as being the one that they really love and cherish. But we've, you know, when you think about it, we've played a lot longer than Ryan's Fancy played. You know, they played from mid-70s until the late 80s. So, you know, they performed together for about 15 years, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
We've managed to get 30, 35. This band is 35 years old. And I'm not giving up yet, you know.
Oh, I don't see you slowing down anytime soon.
I got a lot to do yet. My good friends in the Rovers just finished their 60th anniversary.
Jesus.
So it's, you know, you don't know how long. As long as my health holds up, and I'm still only young, you know. I mean, I got another, I went in to see a great Canadian country singer this week. I went to see Carole Baker.
Oh, yeah, she was in the province recently.
She was in and doing her farewell tour, and she's 76.
Wow.
So, I mean, I got 18 years to catch up with her, and so, but she did a tremendous show, and it was lovely to watch her, because I'm always learning, no matter where you go, and she's a real pro on stage. So I learned a few little things from her that night, and I realized that, you know, here she was at the sold-out show in the Arts and Culture Center with her fans from, you know, she's been probably playing for over 50 years.
I can imagine.
She's the same vintage of Anne Murray, and she has that kind of prestige too, because, you know, the woman sang with Tommy Hunter, and she sang with Hank Snow, and she sang with, you know, a kind of who's who of the Canadian country music scene. And so she was... that was a great eye-opening experience for me. I got to meet her, and you know, I wasn't expecting. I went out of interest, and because I love that, you know, they're craftsmen and craftswomen when they know how to handle an audience and tell a story. That's, you know, that's a big part of what we do. So,
yeah, that's wonderful. And right now, your summer is going to be absolutely packed right now. You still have yet to announce the remainder of your tour dates, but you do have a big one coming up July 13th. You're going to be closing out the 49th annual Newfoundland and Labrador Folk Festival, and that's a festival you guys played countless times. I believe you headlined once in like 2010, I think.
Absolutely, yeah.
And how excited are you to be headlining the festival again this year?
Really excited. And, you know, I mean, the festival itself has been some controversy in the last year or so, but you know, as a young person, again, before I even played music, you know, my grandfather was really good friends with Neil Murray's father. And when I was a kid, Sunday afternoons, I'd be down to Murray's band while Figgy Duff was out rehearsing in the backyard. And then I got to see them play at the Folk Festival. I got to see Kelly Russell and Jim Payne play at the Folk Festival. I got to see, you know, again, so many Newfoundland, great Newfoundland artists, Emile and Rufus and Minnie White and all those people, and it was inspiring. And I can remember being, you know, I'm 59, so I was at some of the first folk festivals. I got to see them, and I can remember watching Kelly Russell, who ends up later on, ironically, playing in my band.
That's, you know, full circle. I was just about to say.
And, you know, I said, geez, I could do that. Why can't I do that? I can sing. I knew I could sing. I was in glee clubs and whatnot. And I get asked to sing in the solos. And so I could sing. I knew I kind of had it in my head that I knew how to sing. I'd love to do that. I'd love to be up there is what I was thinking to myself, you know. And the folk festival has grown into a major cultural event for Newfoundland. And the mosaic of Newfoundland music has diversified and changed. And, you know, it's grown into a major. I was there last year for the Emmy Lou Harris show. And it was just an amazing.
It was packed.
Packed house. And, you know, it's always been something that's really special. Can't lose it.
No, absolutely not.
No reason. There is no reason. You put the politics of it aside, and everybody has an idea. It has a strong membership that are, you know, they all have their own ideas about it. But a consensus will be found.
Yes.
And that festival will go on, and when I'm dead and gone and you're dead and gone, please God, it'll be still up there.
Oh, yes.
Highlighting. I mean, look at it. Look at what Fergus has done with the young folk in the hall. You know, which is something that he started many years ago, and that the folk arts people came in and took that under their wing.
Yeah.
And I mean, what's come out of that? You know more than I do about what's come out of that.
Yes, you can thank half the musicians now that came from, like, say, when Fergus started it, now for their careers, basically, because they went through the Young Folk at the Hall and through the Neil Murray stage, too.
That's right, and that's so important, you know, like, we have a very distinct culture here. It's changing annually as we have people coming from all over the world to live here now. We have, you know, African music. We have Chinese music. And people that are living and you know, honing and developing their craft right here in the heart of, you know, Irish Newfoundland in music, where that's the mainstay, but we have everything, and we have to embrace that because good music is good music.
Exactly.
And, you know, we have that festival is something really special. There's not many festivals in the country like it. Similar festival is over in Canso. Stan Rogers Festival is very similar. It's a songwriters festival, and people come from lots of people come from Nova Scotia, but people come from all over the world, and Celtic Colors is another one. You know, you go to. I had the biggest eye opening of my career. I was going to Celtic Colors for the first time this year past, and I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, you went by yourself that time.
I did, yeah, and you know, I'm not in my comfort zone performing by myself, in that kind of a an atmosphere. But, you know, I have a big repertoire of music, and I have lots of stories.
All big time.
Every song that I sing, I have a story to go with it that's longer than the song. So I felt, you know, totally at home in that situation. But I saw things, and I witnessed, and you know, it's all about good music. It's all about people coming together, sharing that. And this, you know, our festival is really, really important, bringing people from all over the province and bringing them together on one stage for one weekend. And, you know, people are showing off their abilities and their talents, and that can't stop.
No, it can't. And you put the politics aside and everything that's happened from, you know, when they had Emmylou Harris last year to now. Like, I have, like, lived experience from being a part of the Newfoundland Labrador Folk Festival, like from a volunteer standpoint, and also being on the board at one point. Like, I view it as much as you would view it as well. Like, it's a place where everyone can come together at one, in one area, the Bannerman Park or Bowering Park, wherever you have it to each year. It's a very important part of the Newfoundland Labrador culture, really. It's a breeding ground for artists that would really, like, you know, not have a headline spot, and then all of a sudden, hey, you play at the folk festival, we'll book you.
Well, where do the Dardanelles come from? Where do the once come from? You know, it's the opportunity. The once meet up in...
It's fun the door.
Yeah, they meet up as actors over in Trinity. You know, that's from what I remember. I can remember the beginnings of the once, and you get this tremendously talented young singer, Geraldine, and two tremendously talented musicians, and you got something really special. But the first place that they were really noticed is up in Bannerman Park. And without it, they don't get to travel the world. Quote the Raven, you got the same sort of deal. Fortunate ones. Just in the last, you know, 10 or 12 years, bands like the Irish Descendants, you know, that was some of the first time we played a folk festival. That's probably the biggest thing we had ever done. And now all of a sudden, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 people saw us play, and you know, we got recognition from that, and that just builds and lets us build, and gives us that momentum to build, and gives us that perception amongst the people.
Exactly.
Here you are. And you're worthy, you're just as good. And you put things alongside. I mean, a lot of people will criticize, and you know, there's everybody has an idea of what things are going to be. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you put Andy Irvine on that stage. Andy Irvine is a world-class Celtic musician. And you put him up on that stage with local musicians from Newfoundland who are equally as talented, have a lot to show. And all of a sudden they say, Jesus, you know, they're just as good as Andy Irvine. That's important, you know.
Yes.
They fit right in. You know, nothing. And you learn, you know, you see something that's different and new and cutting edge. I mean, I saw things over Celtic Colors. That was amazing. As a young fiddler from Scotland, Ryan, his last name escapes me, but like just, you know, outrageously talented people. And he gets a whole new audience in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, and that helps him. And you know, we need to have the same opportunities, because someone is going to come to the folk festival and take in, you know, what's going on there and bring it to their festival, which could be in Merritt, BC.
Yeah,
you know, that's important, and the prestige of that festival is you know, built, and we need to keep that. And you know, I know, you know, the sponsors, people who've invested into it, wisely invested into it, we need to make sure that they're all kept up, and mm-hmm. everybody, you know, lots of wonderful things have been performed there. It's a, you know, family event in the daytimes, there'll be a family event in the evening times. One of the things that was really interesting for me, something that I've always fought for, is alcohol in these things. All right, people are coming to those shows. I've played for every folk festival from here to Nain, and you get on the festival grounds, and the liquor laws dictate that you have to have a beer tent and segregate the people. And I've been to great big festivals in the United States, for instance, the Milwaukee Irish Festival, 300,000 people for the weekend. You walk through it just like you are over, you know, at Mile One or at the Mary Brown Center with a beer in your hand, and you know, you got children in a stroller.
Yeah,
and it's a family. It's still a family event.
Yes, and there was a lot of backlash to that too. But I was down at the festival, and there was like no issues, you know, with the liquor license and stuff.
With his child in a carrier and on his belly, watching Steve Earle and Lemmy Lou Harris, and the child might have been 2 or 3 years of age. That child will remember every moment of that. He, you know, 25 years, he'll remember that night, and it might inspire him to become a musician.
Pretty much.
You know, and I remember being in Newport, Rhode Island, big Irish festival, and an afternoon session, and a man is there with his wife and two children, and one of the children was an infant, and he was sitting in a chair feeding the child with, you know, his bottle of milk, while the mother was giving him little sips of his Guinness. Well, he held on to the job.
Oh, my God.
And I always remembered it. I said, this doesn't happen in Newfoundland. In Newfoundland, you know, all the drinkers, and, you know, especially in rural Newfoundland, they're set over in the corner. They don't hear the show. And by the time, you know, they have an extra 2 or 3 drinks that they normally... It's no different than having a glass of wine home in your house.
Yeah.
With your children are there. It's no different.
No, absolutely.
And now all of a sudden they're over, all segregated into one thing. They have... probably more than they should have, and next thing there's a brawl, and just, you know, it's completely uncivilized sort of situation. So I'm delighted that the organizers pushed for that, and from what I could see, it was a complete success. And you know, hopefully that will allow other festivals in Newfoundland and Labrador to be able to do the same thing. And
yeah,
I think it'll be a much better experience for everybody involved. I cannot stand it. You're standing on the stage, and the beer tent is 300 feet away from the stage. And that's where the bulk of the people are. You know, you got a smaller contingent of people up in the front. And the rest of the big crowd is way down there. They're not even listening to you. So what's this, you know, like, you know, it doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, we're all there to have fun and really just get away from, you know, the business and craziness of the world these days. That's another conversation for another time. But I do want to get to like a question or two left before we wrap this up. Sure. But again, back to that point of, like, you know, the beer area expanding, the liquor area expanding. Yeah. At the end of the day, we're all just there to have a good time and support local music and support music that, you know, comes from other parts of the country and parts of the world to our shores, because we don't really get these opportunities every so often.
That's right. And why should, you know, I mean, at the festival itself, at the Bannerman Park, the beer tent was, you know, very well attended, but it was down over the side of the bank, a little bit over towards the Colonial Building. And, you know, you went over there and you left your wife or your husband with the children while you went down and had a beer or two. And then you went up and he replaced you. He went down for his turn. Now, you know, in the afternoon sessions, you can have little children and put your picnic blanket out and lie down on the ground and listen to some tremendous music. And if dad wants to have a beer or mom wants to have a glass of wine, what's the big deal?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's a very civilized way of doing things.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, it's their decision of if they want to do it or not.
That's right. You know, no one gets out of hand. No one, you know, I mean, you know, some of these festivals that I've been to festivals where complete, utter brawls have taken place. And it's only because, you know, the opportunity wasn't for them to co-mingle together and be more civilized. You're not going to do crazy things in front of children. You know, for the most part, and security, you know, is strong. In every festival I've ever been in the United States, you went over to a kiosk, you got your pint of Guinness or your pint of whatever, or you went and got a drink, and you walked back and you sat with your family, and everybody enjoyed themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one question before we get to, you know, plugging the socials on the website here. If there's any advice that you can give to young musicians out there that are looking to break through, and especially we talked about the point of, like, the Folk Festival being a breeding ground for musicians, and especially bands like the Once and the Dardanelles and Salt Beef Junkies really coming up and really, you know, like, forming at the festival. Porta Poutines is another one. They formed the Folk Festival themselves. What would you say to people that are just starting out that really want to take the next step? What would you say to them and why?
Do not be afraid to approach people who are doing it and have been doing it. I love when someone comes up to me and says, how did you do this? Because I'm only too delighted to pass out any advice I can give. I've been down that road. One of the pieces of advice I always give young musicians and people starting bands is, don't forget the tax man. Make sure you get a good accountant, because
get a bookkeeper.
Yeah, get a bookkeeper, because you know things pile up on you, and then all of a sudden, you know, what should be a pleasant experience, it can be very unpleasant, and that's one of the things. But you know, take advantage. You know, if you're a young fiddler in Newfoundland, find out where Kelly Russell is doing a session. Go meet him. Go talk to him. He's only too delighted to share his knowledge and share his music with you. Go down and sit in the sessions. If you're any kind of instrumentalist, you imagine the opportunities. We didn't have that. That didn't exist. You couldn't go to a session down at Aaron's Pub or over at the Embassy or down at the Kitty Vitty. They didn't exist. You know, just, you know, we had Bridget's and Aaron's Pub. That was it.
That was it?
That was it.
Wow.
You didn't have, you know, Greensleeves on Sunday afternoons would have an Irish band. And but other than that, was, I mean, live music in our genre, 7 days a week, from 5 o'clock in the evening till closing time, in several bars on George Street, you know. So go meet them. Come up and ask Con O'Brien for help, if he can help you. If I have the time, I'm going to help. I was that person. And I didn't, you know, I had a great encouragement. I mean, you don't understand, to be able to stand at the bar after closing hours with Dermot O'Reilly, Fergus O'Byrne, and Ralph O'Brien, and just sing songs till daylight. I got that opportunity.
Yeah.
And you know, that's you can't buy that kind of mentorship. You know.
No, absolutely.
And the encouragement, and that's what, you know, the music lives on and grows because of the people have an awful love of it. So you know, if you run into Jeannie Houston, or Christina, or anybody, or Jerry Strong. Anybody, all of them have, you know, tremendous talents. They have stories to tell you, and they'll direct you towards, you should be listening to this. Or, did you ever hear this band? And then you'll learn things from them. You know, the Rosemary Lawtons of the world, they didn't get bitten by that bug. You know, that took a lot of getting out and about and, you know, learning to love it.
Yeah.
And that's important. If you really love it, practice. Takes practice. You know, you watch.
Absolutely. A lot of reps.
A lot of practice. I'm rehearsing with the band more now than I've ever done.
No way.
Which is, you know, we're rehearsing once a week these days. And what we're doing is we're running through, we got big shows coming, so we'll run through the set list. And if we're adding new material, we'll run that. And if we're looking to arrange something new, I arranged a song last week. On Thursday and Tuesday morning, we recorded it. And, you know, that's important. I mean, I got to keep it fresh, too. I mean, you can only see, you got a dozen or so songs that people really want to hear.
Yeah.
But you're doing 30 songs in a show. And I need a new Rattling Bog. I need a new Cape St. Mary's. So, you know, to find it, you got to work.
And absolutely.
That's the thing. Again, you know, 25% of what I do happens on a stage. 75% of it is getting ready to get up there.
Well, we're going to get to Cape St. Mary's. That very song is getting inducted into the Canadian Songwriters Hall of Fame at the East Coast Music Awards May 8th at the Mary Brown Center in St. John's. The full festival is from May 7th to the 11th, but the gala is May 8th at the Mary Brown Center. For people who want to find out more about the Irish Descendants, everything you got on the go, and a sneak peek of some of those new songs going to be putting out, like First Time Ever I Saw Your Face that you put up back in February. Where can people go to find you when it comes to, say, socials and your website?
Well, our website will get you to the shows, and, you know, we have, if you want to get some swag, we got T-shirts and hats and that sort of stuff. You can go there. But if you want to buy tickets to the shows and see where we're going to be, we'll be putting up in the next week or two all the dates for the summer, and our summer is completely blocked off. We're going all over Hell's Half Acre. So you'll find out where we're going. But if you want to keep, you know, seeing what we're doing and make sure that you don't miss out on some of the new things, you know, because we're not releasing albums in the traditional way anymore. We're putting songs up on TikTok. And Rowan is in charge of the socials. I'm too old for that. I don't understand it the same way he does. I'm a bit better on Twitter or on X than he is, but people are not really going to X for that kind of stuff. But Facebook, our Facebook page, you know, everything that's happening and occurring will, and you'll get little snippets of what we're doing. You know, every time we put out a new song now, we'll release it onto Spotify. We're going to put probably half a dozen songs on Spotify in the next week or so. And we'll be releasing, like we did the first time I ever saw your face, we did a little video treatment of them. And, you know, sometimes you'll use a little bit more resources on the video aspect, depending on the song. And then, you know, when we package them and put them out, whether it be on CDs or vinyl, that'll happen a little bit further in the year. And then at the end of the year, you can get them. I'm finding that in the live shows now, bundling is a big deal. So, you know, you make a CD and we have 15 records. So bundle a half a dozen and give people a good deal on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll buy the 6 CDs. And, you know, you walk away making some money on them. And people go away and listen to those CDs. And, you know, one of the things that's really cool about, you know, 35 years in the business is I'm now playing for your age. And, you know, their moms and dads were our age when we first started playing. And these young people are now showing up to the shows and know every word of every song because they were sitting in their car seats listening to it on the radio in the car driving up the road, driving from St. John's to Fairland or driving from Edmonton to Fort McMurray or Grand Prairie. That's where they heard it. And when they come to the shows, they stand in front of us and go, every word for word for every, you know, lots of songs. It's great.
Yeah, and the Irish Descendants, is Irish Descendants NL on Instagram, TikTok?
I think we're just the Irish Descendants on, that's a good question. But if you go to our Facebook page, that'll bring you to the Instagram page. We are theirishdescendants.com is our website. And on TikTok, I think it's the same. Whatever we are on Facebook, we are on the others. So.
Well, listen, man, we can go on all day with the amount of stories you have to tell and the amount of, you know, like songs that you can provide. But I just want to say personally that you've been a very big help to me. And like when I first started covering the music scene in 2018, there was a couple of others that I've mentioned as well that have helped me out along the way. But most recently, over the past few years, you've been a big help and, you know, being a consistent guest here on the podcast. And we are doing this again in November when Irish Descendants Christmas comes on up again.
I look forward to it. One of the, that puts a smile on my face because not often do you run into someone, an individual like you, who has a great love. And, you know, I was watching you earlier as I played the song for you. You were dancing to it. You like the music. You love the music and being a part of it. And, you know, that's important. You're getting it out to thousands of people. And, you know, it's the new way of doing things. I mean, I tune into you on the radio station very often. I'm that age. I'm that demographic. I'm listening to VOWR for a bit, and podcasts are another way of just spreading that word. And it's important in the new world, in the new way of doing things. But folks like you are invaluable. So anything I can do to ever help or encourage you, I'm always there to do it.
It's an honor, Con, and thanks again for coming on the podcast for a third time. And Wendy, if you're listening to this or watching this, we're doing this again in November, and we're getting you back in again to talk about Irish Descendants Christmas.
I know Wendy since 1992.
And I've known Wendy, I believe, since 2023. Well, Con, thanks again for doing this, man.
My pleasure, Zach. Thank you.
Man, it seems like he's a guest that just never goes away. But it's so great to have Con O'Brien here on Musical Connections every time I try to get him on. He's always a great interview. And for Wendy Phillips, if you're listening to this, we are going to be doing this again Christmas time, so we'll talk when we get closer to the date of the Irish Descendants when they announce their next Christmas tour. If you want to find out more about where they're going to be playing next, you can head over to theirishdescendants.com, head on the show dates tab on the page, and you'll find out everywhere that they're playing from now up until the middle of June. Well, right now, here is that very song that will be inducted into the Canadian Songwriters Hall of Fame May 8th at the Mary Brown Center as part of the 37th Annual East Coast Music Awards. The Irish Descendants for you now, and Let Me Fish off Cape St. Mary's.
Take me back to my western boat. Let me fish off Cape St. Mary's, where the hagdown sail and the foghorns wail, with my friends the Browns and the Clarys. Let me fish off Cape St. Mary's. Let me feel my dory lift to the broad Atlantic combers, where the tide rips swirl and the wild doves whirl, where old Neptune calls the numbers, neath the broad Atlantic combers. Let me sail up Golden Bay with my oilskins all a-streaming from the thunder squall when I hauled me trawl, and my old Cape Ann a-gleamin' with my oilskins all a-streamin'. Let me view that rugged shore where the beach is all a-glisten, where the capelin spun, where from dusk to dawn you bait your trawl and listen to the undertow a-hissin'. In the earth's cool breast, where the stars shine out their wonder and the seas roll up their thunder. Take me back to my western home. Let me fish off Cape St. Mary, where the hagdown sail and the foghorns wail, with my friends
And that wraps up this bonus episode of Musical Connections. Once again, a big thank you to Con O'Brien for connecting with me for this episode of Musical Connections. And, of course, bonus episodes drop when you least expect it. Main episodes drop every Tuesday wherever you get your podcast. And thank you so much for listening to the show and for spreading the word about this podcast. You are a small part of a bigger puzzle of growing our Newfoundland and Labrador music sector one song at a time. Now, how can you help this sector grow and this podcast grow? Well, first things first, follow the podcast on your favorite streaming services, on RSS or Apple Music, and once you're done listening to an episode, leave a review there, because it'll help spread the word about this show and the music of this province a lot. You can also follow me on Facebook and Instagram for any Musical Connections related news. Zach Snow on Facebook and Zach Snow NL on Instagram. You can also find full-length video versions of Musical Connections on the Musical Connections NL YouTube channel. Subscribe to the channel now and help me get to 1,000 subscribers. I am trying to help grow this sector, and a big way to do that is to subscribe to the channel. It's a great way to support independent media, so please subscribe to the channel and help connect this music with the rest of the world. Now, of course, stay tuned this Tuesday as I'll be dropping a brand new episode with Jim Wildfinger Mercer, and we talk about his brand new song, Don't Tell Me What to Do, and a whole lot more. That does it for this special bonus episode, and of course, this will be our road to the East Coast Music Awards, which are next week. Very excited about that. Once again, thank you for connecting again. I've been your host, Zach Snow. Join me once more, where we will highlight the music of Newfoundland and Labrador, and you'll be seeing the main episode next week. Until then, stay safe, be kind to one another, and stay connected. Bye for now.